at the time to which my present tale refers, the king of the beings of this second group was the grandson of the great-grandson of that learned being. His name was Conesian. My later inquiry and investigation showed that this King Conesian had introduced a most wise and beneficial measure in order to uproot terrifying evil that had arisen among the beings who, by the will of fate, had become his subjects. And he introduced this measure in the following circumstances. One day, King Conesian observed that the beings of his community were becoming less and less capable of work, while scandals, robberies, and acts of violence were on the increase among them, as well as many other unpleasant incidents, which had never occurred before, or only in quite exceptional cases. These facts surprised and grieved the king, who became very thoughtful and resolved to get to the root of this sorry state of affairs. After lengthy observation, he finally came to the conclusion that the cause lay in a new habit of the beings of his community, namely, the habit of chewing the seeds of a plant then called Gulgulian. This surplanetary formation still arises on the planet Earth today, and those of your favorites who consider themselves well-educated call it papaver, but the ordinary beings simply call it poppy. As I've just said, the beings of Merrill Placey had a passion at that time for chewing the seeds of this surplanetary formation, which had to be gathered only when ripe. In the course of further observations and impartial reflections, the king realized that these seeds contained a certain something, which, when introduced into these beings, had the power to change completely for the time being all the established habits of their psyche, so that they saw, understood, sensed, and acted quite otherwise than they were accustomed to do. For instance, a crow would appear to them to be a peacock, a trough of water a sea, a harsh clatter music. Goodwill appeared to them as enmity, insults as love, and so on and so forth. As soon as King Conesian became thoroughly convinced of all this, he dispatched some of his closest and most trustworthy subjects throughout the land to issue strict orders in his name, forbidding all beings of his community to chew these poppy seeds. He also arranged that those who disobeyed his orders should be punished and fined. At first, thanks to these measures, the use of these seeds appeared to diminish in the country of Merrill Placey. Very soon, however, it was discovered that this was not so. In reality, the number of those who chewed the seeds was even greater than before. On realizing this, the wise King Conesian decided to punish still more severely those who persisted in this habit. At the same time, he increased the surveillance over his subjects and enforced punishment with even greater strictness. He himself began going about everywhere in the city of Gob, personally examining the guilty and meting out punishments, both corporal and moral. In spite of all this, the desired result was not obtained. The number of those who chewed poppy seeds rose steadily in the city of Gob, and reports from other territories subject to him showed a daily increase. It then became evident that many three-brained beings, who had never before indulged in this habit, now took it up merely out of curiosity. One of the particularities of the psyche of the three-brained beings of that planet that has taken your fancy. That is, merely to try out the effect of those seeds, whose use had been prohibited by the king, and punished with such relentless severity. I must emphasize here that although this curiosity had begun to be crystallized in the psyche of your favorites immediately after the loss of Atlantis, it never functioned so blatantly in the beings of former epochs as it does in the contemporary three-brained beings there, who have more of it, I dare say, than there are hairs on a tussock. So, my boy, when the wise King Canizian finally became convinced that he could not root out the passion of chewing Gugulian seeds through fear of punishment, and saw that the only result of his measures had been the death of a few of his guilty subjects, he repealed all the orders he had previously issued, and once again began to think seriously about how to find a really effective means of destroying this evil so lamentable for his community. As I learned much later, thanks to an ancient surviving monument, the great King Canutian then retired to his chamber. For 18 days, neither ate nor drank, but only very seriously thought and thought. According to my most recent investigations, the king was particularly anxious to find some means of uprooting this evil, because by that time all the affairs of his community were going from bad to worse. The beings who were addicted to this passion had almost ceased to work. The flow of revenue into the communal treasury had entirely dried up, and ruin stared the country in the face. The wise king decided to deal with this evil indirectly by playing upon the weaknesses in the psyche of his subjects. With this aim, he invented the most original religious doctrine corresponding to the psyche of the beings of that time, and he propagated this invention of his by every means at his disposal. In this religious doctrine, it was held, among other things, that far from the continent of Ashark lay a large island on which there existed our Mr. God. You must know that in those days not one of the ordinary beings was aware of the existence of any cosmic concentrations other than their own planet Earth. They were certain that the scarcely visible white points far away in space were nothing more than the pattern on the veil of the world, that is to say, of their planet. For in their notions, the whole world consisted, as I've just said, of their planet alone. They also believed that this veil was supported like a canopy on special pillars, the bases of which rested on their planet. Well, it was asserted in that ingenious doctrine of the astute King Canutian that the Mr. God had intentionally attached to our souls the organs and limbs we now have, in order to protect us against our environment and enable us to serve him effectively and profitably, and not him alone, but also the souls already taken to that island of his. When we die, and our soul is liberated from all these specially attached parts, it becomes what in reality it should be, and is immediately taken to this island, where, in accordance with how it has existed with its organs and limbs on our continent of Ashark, our Mr. God assigns to it an appropriate place for its further existence. If the soul has fulfilled its duties honestly and conscientiously, Mr. God leaves it to continue its existence on his island. But the soul that here on the continent of Ashark has been idle, or discharged its duties indolently or negligently, existing only for the gratification of the desires of its attached parts, or, finally, had not kept his commandments, such a soul, our Mr. God, sends to a smaller neighboring island for its further existence. Here on the continent of Ashark exist many spirits attendant upon him, who walk among us wearing caps of invisibility, thanks to which they can constantly watch us, unnoticed, and report all our doings to Mr. God, or inform him on the day of judgment. We can conceal nothing from them, neither our action nor our thoughts. This doctrine also said that our continent of Ashark and all the other continents and islands of the world were created by our Mr. God only to serve him and the meritorious souls already dwelling on his island. All the continents and islands of the world are, as it were, places of preparation and storehouses for everything needed for this island of his. This island, where Mr. God himself exists with the meritorious souls, is called Paradise, and existence there is just roses, roses. All its rivers are of milk, and their banks of honey. No one there needs to toil or labor. Everything necessary for a happy, carefree, and blissful existence is to be found there, supplied in superabundance from our own continent and the other continents and islands of the world. This island of paradise is full of young and lovely women of all the peoples and races of the world, and any one of them belongs for the asking to the soul that desires her. In certain public squares of that superb island are great heaps of jewels, from the most brilliant diamonds to the deepest turquoises, and every soul can take anything he likes without the least hindrance. In other public squares of that beatific island are piled huge mountains of sweetmeats prepared with essence of poppy and hemp, and every soul may help himself to as much as he pleases at any hour of the day or night. There are no diseases there, and of course none of those lice or fleas that give us all no peace here and blight our whole existence. The other smaller island, where for the rest of their existence our Mr. God sends the souls whose temporary physical parts have been lazy here and have not existed according to his commandments, is called Hell. All the rivers on this island are of burning pitch. The whole atmosphere stinks like a skunk at bay. Swarms of horrible beings blow police whistles in every square, and all the carpets, chairs, and beds are made of fine needles with their points sticking out. One very salty biscuit is given to each soul once a day, and there's not a single drop of drinking water on this island. There are also innumerable other torments that the beings of the earth would not wish to undergo for anything in the world or even to imagine.